Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to the latest episode of Biblioscapes in Discussion, whereas today I've got the great pleasure of being chatting to photographer Samuel Fradley. Good evening, Sam.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for taking time out to come on and talk to me about your book. So, Winds of Change, recently published by Cozy Books. But before we get into talking about it, Sam, it'd be great if you could give everyone an introduction to your photographic journey and background.
So thanks for having me on the podcast. Really, really appreciate it. My background in photography really stems from my teenage years as a skateboarder. Grew up very much reading Thrasher magazine and looking at a lot of this sort of American publications in skateboarding, the skate videos. And naturally through that, through skateboarding, you'd have the brands and that relationship to, I guess, the States. Photography became a real interest of mine growing up through skateboarding and video, and it kind of spiraled into studying it at school, which was my first interaction with real photography using a darkroom. What is the purpose of imagery? And that led me to college, where I did a sort of foundation year before university. And then I went to Plymouth University and studied my BA in photography, which was good few years ago, 2018, I graduated, I think. So my background in photography was, I guess, on the educational one as well as my interest. And it really spiraled down to, I wasn't sure what to do.
Yep.
Progressing forward after school. And it felt like a very natural route for me. And here I am now, yeah.
Very good. Excellent. And obviously, a couple of years ago, you published Winds of Change through Cozy Books. So for those of you who don't know the book, it'd be great if you could give, like, summarize exactly, I suppose, what it's about, what's the background to the book.
So I'd finished university. I was much like the rest of the world at the time, just living my life, trying to figure things out post-university, especially as a photographer. And to be honest, at the time, photography was not a priority or a focus at all.
Yep.
And then COVID came, and COVID very much, well, I was living at home with my parents. I had really nothing to do, to be honest with you. And the only thing I could do was go out for walks and take my camera, because that's what everyone was doing at the time. And it kind of spiraled into a project. It was unintentional. It was not an idea. It just happened out. And I guess the backstory of how it happened, it was very much the day during COVID when we were having the problem of getting face masks into the country. And it made me realize how, at that moment, I realized that my impression and idea of what the United Kingdom was actually does not exist, and how reliant we are on the rest of the world. And the idea, the notion of a title, Winds of Change, was what is Britain's place in the world during COVID and moving forward. And I gave a talk to students at Plymouth College of Art right before COVID, actually. Sorry, during COVID. Basically saying that when these events happen,
yep,
and the winds of change move, that change globally, it's usually followed by war and conflict. And China's rise, very much in the center of COVID, became apparent. And I think I was right on that regard, because then Ukraine happened, you've got Israel and Gaza. But more to the point, you can see now in American politics, and when you hear them on the news, it's China, 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 China. So there's a new global power play going on. And the book Winds of Change was, for me, someone growing up learning about the war, the Battle of Britain, the Empire, the idea that actually, where is the country going? And my view is we need to move on and figure out what we are in that post-Brexit, post-COVID world we live in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a wonderful body of work. And did you start, I suppose, photographing for it once kind of the idea came to you, or the th it came to you, and how did you kind of approach that? What narrative were you wanting to tell through the images? Because it's a great mix of portraits, landscapes, but then also mixed in with I suppose some more interesting day-to-day shots.
Yeah, so it's a really great question, and it kind of came in two elements. The Some of the portraits were interactions with people during the pandemic. They were random events, like meeting NPCs in a video game, especially during the lockdowns. To even come across people to be able to photograph them, I don't think many people were able to do that. The landscapes, and I don't know if you can cast your mind back, but in Devon, from the March lockdown or February one, all the way until I think August or September, the weather was absolutely immense. It was those sort of golden hour sunsets, I think, most days for 5 months. And the landscapes were very natural. And even the essay in the book kind of sums it up really nicely. It's that escape to the English countryside and the coastline, the idea of like the National Trust holiday. How artists used to kind of soothingly paint the English landscape during tight external crises. So they all merged into the project as a book.
No, actually, it's strange, just when you look through the work and then you get the insight in terms of the timings of when it was photographed. There, it the landscapes, particularly with the lovely soft light in many of them, just perfect timings. It really there is a real eerie feel to them in terms of just the feels in it, and there are looks, and there's a feel of emptiness amongst the images, which obviously what was genuinely, I suppose, the case, because they weren't full of the usual summer tourists.
Yeah, I mean, I walked. So there's a lot of the images were taken on a postal path between Brixham and Kingswear, where the River Dart is in Dartmouth, and that's probably a 5 or 6 mile walk. And most time or not, I wouldn't see nobody at all. And if I fell down a cliff on those walks, no one would know. That's how isolated it was. And it was really funny because during COVID, it was the first time I'd ever heard of the phrase, "The sun never sets on the British Empire," which obviously implies when the sun sets in London, it rises on the other side of the world. And I thought that was a really nice wordplay, given the sunset walks I was on. And I think it did feel like to me for the first time that that period of history was very much ending. And I think the Queen's speech during that time as well was a very important speech because she was the authority figure of the country as well during that period. And she's the last real link of a historical figure to Churchill, the war, the empire, and vice versa. Yeah, it's a eerie, weird time as well, especially given that she's passed away as well.
Well, that's it, and I think the essay at the start really kind of reflects and touches on that in terms of just like the changing of the British Empire. I mean, for the vast majority of us, we have only ever known Queen Elizabeth II to have been on the throne. So yes, it does signal quite it signals a massive change for, I suppose, the British Empire, how the empire is viewed around the world.
Yeah, and I think whether you like that idea of that, or you're against it, or you like the royal family, or you're against it, you can't deny that her as the figurehead defines the whole nation externally. You judge the country on almost the royal family in a way. So I tried to put that into the book, and I think again it was just a fluke timing. The images where we're outside, with the really funny image of the lady sat in the chair,
Yes, with the
just so you
mask
know
on.
which one I'm looking at, wearing what's Na Royal Navy Puss's spiced rum, with a queen mask on. The image of the queen on the TV, they actually wheeled it out onto the driveway and sang the national anthem. I think it was the Jubilee celebration, and it was the the strangest experience because, on the one hand, as a photographer, I mean, wow, I've met these strange people. Not strange people, not strange people. I retract strange people.
Yeah.
I've met these people on the side of a road. They're having a Jubilee Union Jack party and they're allowing me to photograph them. And then on the other hand, we're in COVID. It's like in lockdown pretty much. It's the whole world is upside down. And it was that really weird sense of two worlds colliding as well.
Yeah. No, yeah. And how was your interaction with the people who you photographed? How did you approach them? Did you know what you were looking for? Did you know the spectrum of individuals, I suppose, or backgrounds or interests that you were looking to try and capture to feed into the narrative you're wanting to tell?
Honestly, no, there was nothing. And the day I met them, I really didn't want to go out and take photos. I dragged myself out. And the only reason I did is because everyone at that time went a bit loopy. Everyone had put a Union Jack outside their house or something. And I haven't seen that before. So I thought, okay, maybe there'll be some nice gardens at sort of golden hour with Union Jacks out or the Queen. And I went round a different way I would normally walk, and they were just out there in the front garden. And I walked past them, and then I got chatting to them about what I was doing,
Yeah.
and the photos just naturally led on to that, which I'm really happy with. I think technically, I wish it was quite late in the day. I wish I'd seen them an hour earlier, like from a photographer perspective.
Yes.
But you can't be picky when you meet people like that, you know.
No. And in terms of the other people you photographed for it, how did you kind of decide who you were looking for, and how did you approach them, or were there particular people you were looking to try and work into the narrative, work into the story?
Not really. I think I wanted to have a mix of older and younger people, and I wanted to highlight that ideological struggle, I suppose, between the people I'd photographed at the street party were very much traditional British people of that
Yes.
generation. They love the Queen, they love the country, they love the empire, you know, those
Yep.
sort of things. Whereas for the younger generation, sort of below the age of 35-ish, there's a lot of fear and anxiety. We just had Brexit, we just had COVID, and we're in a massive global crisis. And if you asked a lot of people under 30, what does it mean to be British? I don't think anyone could give you a very serious answer other than tea and crumpets or something. And that idea that the sun never sets on it is interesting because there's a new generation of people who've never experienced that world as well.
Yeah.
You know.
And what's our time period were you photographing the work? Was were By the time you finished photographing it, because I'm trying to think back to when lockdowns finished, were we still in lockdown, or were we out of lockdown and need a bit more flexibility and freedom to kind of do the work?
A lot of the portraits were after the lockdown.
Yep.
Because obviously it wasn't exactly ideal
Yeah.
to
Yeah,
break the
absolutely.
lockdown rules. The portrait in the churchyard was during a lockdown, but that was at quite a distance.
Yep.
And the street party as well, although it looks closer, was at quite a distance as well, which was challenging to take good pictures of people at a distance, you know.
Yep.
A lot of cropping involved.
Yeah.
But yeah, particularly a lot of it was the landscapes were during the lockdowns. The
Yep.
portraits, other than a couple, were pretty much outside of them. Yeah. So it
Yeah.
was really from the day COVID happened right up until the last lockdown we had was when the work was being made and produced.
Cool. And I suppose at what time, what stage during the photograph and all, but did it become, I suppose, quite a more of a major project for you? Obviously, the book followed it laterally, but at what stage did you think, right, okay, there's maybe a kind of a solid body of work, a solid narrative here, as opposed to just the daily walk going out and taking photographs, which I think so many people did.
Yeah, I think it hit me. So it was 2020, the latter end of it, when I realized when I was watching the news and they had the death count on the screen, the daily death count, which looking back is absolutely insane. But the thought of it was like 60,000 and it was going up and up and up every minute on TV. And it's when I realized kind of, holy shit, this is really insane in a global moment. It's a historical moment that we are living through. And that's when I realized actually the photos I take now and the story I take is more of a document to that period and a reference to it. And I think over time now that book will become more important and hopefully will be picked up by more people looking back at it as a reference to a photographer or an artist working during that time, because I haven't seen many publications or bodies of work during COVID that's reflecting on it as a period as of yet. So I'm really, really hopeful it does get that track in the future as well.
And at what stage did you approach Greg? Did Greg approach you in terms of bringing it together as a published body?
So I went to a few publishers to get some advice about it. I went to Ian Sargent at Another Place Press, who's a great guy, great publisher, really lovely. And Ian was way too booked up to consider it. He didn't knock it. He just said, I've got way too much on. And Ian helped me actually with a lot of the sequencing, giving me some opinions on sequencing and design, pointing out some technical things in the images like shadows. Actually went to Dan Wood, who's a really great photographer. He's published several books about kind of sequencing layouts, and in the end I kind of made the decision, okay, if I'm going to do it as a book, I'm going to pitch it professionally and properly to publishers. So I created a pitch pack that I put forward with the images, a bit of description, a bit of text about myself. And I also told the publishers that, I'm prepared to pay some of the costs towards this to make it happen as well, which I don't think a lot of photographers would offer. And I pitched it to Greg and he really liked the pitch, and it kind of materialized from there with Zoo. And Greg was absolutely amazing. We did it all kind of over emails, to be honest. Title design, book design, paper, everything was done. But he's an absolutely top guy, and Tozu is a re like I really like Tozu in the photo book world, because they are focused on the beauty of the book as well.
Yeah,
And even if
absolutely.
you're doing a book with sort of, you're not doing a hardback, the softback process was still so considered, like to get the cover be beautiful, the on the rear side sort of nice introduction to the book as a title, because I really wanted the title on the book rather than an image. So I think the half and half, the gold title to really contrast the gold on the flowers
Yeah, works
was a
really
really
nicely.
genuinely lovely design choice from Greg. Really nice as well, as I think I'm only the second or third, I might be wrong, Kozu, who's done a documentary book. So I think it was a good experiment for Greg as well, to see how a documentary narrative could fit within his art books, I guess, which are really beautiful, beautiful items in themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very different approach from when you're doing I suppose, a traditional maybe landscape photography or fine art book of some description. We all look at it, but yeah, so I'm interested. So, did you start off with the original sequence, and how did that come about, and how did you make your image selection as well? Because I'd imagine you've obviously taken probably quite a few more images Where do you draw the line in terms of how did you think, what did you think was the right number of images, too many, too little, and how did you kind of, I suppose, go through that whole journey? Because I know it can be either a love hate relationship, I suspect.
So the cutting, the sequencing, I did a sequence, and then the sequence was probably would have come to nearly 100 pages in a book, and I thought, well, for cost purposes, I need to cut it down. So I did a selection. I showed that to some photographers and friends, and then kind of got some feedback, and then I cut it down again, and then I can't entirely remember if me and Greg did change it too much. I think we tweaked maybe a little bit, but the sequence that went in with Greg was pretty much the finalish one when I'd submitted it to him, to be honest. And what I'd done is I'd actually created a PDF copy of it in InDesign with a rough title and rough colors and submitted that as a way of saying this is what it would look like. Which worked really, really well, actually. And I think it gave a really clear vision for the book, for both of us, for moving forward.
I think I totally agree. I think it shows that you've got a clear vision about the book and about the story, particularly when you're looking at documentary, because there's got to be a very clear narrative, or there that's what I think that's what's of interest to a lot of people. So I think if you're able to demonstrate that to Greg or whoever else is looking at the book, then I think these things all stand you in good stead. But I think the sequence for me works really, really nicely. I think it's a lovely balance of images. Were there any particular favorite images that didn't make the final cut, or were you pretty happy with how it worked out? And
I think there's a couple of images in there that that didn't go in, and they didn't go in because really they didn't have a place in that sequence. I think it would have distracted away from it. And the ones that didn't make it in as well, I was very conscious from Greg's perspective of he was publishing this book for me, and there's costs associated with him publishing this book, and I wanted to make sure that it's a risk for him to do that. It was fairly cheap to produce and fairly affordable for people to also purchase. So those images that I did like that didn't make the cut were conscious for the greater purpose, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I think that's always the biggest challenge for people when they're beginning to sequence their work. It's very easy to look at individuals in images on a very individual standalone basis, but I think when you actually form them into part of a sequence, and I've spoken about this many times, it's sometimes the strongest images that work as standalone don't work in a sequence, and likewise, some of the what you might define as being weaker images on a standalone basis actually add enhance a full body of work. They help tell the story. They link the different elements of narrative together, because you're telling a story, and there's a lovely story when you look at your work starting in the Jubilee and working through, and then you've got the lovely autumn or the lovely summer sun, and then there's movement into some of like the more industrial run down sections of the book as well. And then just some of the lovely colors as well. So the images help and link it all together. But overall, a really
Yeah,
positive it.
it was really difficult to tell that story.
Sorry, carry
No,
on.
go on.
No, carry on.
I was just going to add and say it was actually really difficult to tell that story because living in Devon, we don't have the luxury of a lot of urban environments either. So 98% of my surroundings is countryside and fields. So to throw in that urbanization and really highlight that decline, because the decline of a nation, which I wanted to one hint at the title Winds of Change, two highlight fall of the empire, and three this post-Brexit world where Britain finds its place. Is that decline has been so prevalent, we don't even make face masks, you know, a bit of fabric that can protect you in a pandemic. We're relying on a country thousands of miles away. So trying to highlight that narrative during a COVID pandemic, being able to travel between the lockdowns while being stuck close to home, which a lot of photographers really struggle to make work close to home. I'd say it's probably my biggest photographic challenge I will ever have is creating a narrative on my doorstep as well.
Yeah, but you've successfully pulled it off, and I think has it given you it motivation, inspiration for maybe doing a similar project, maybe another book, another zine or something like that in the future, now having gone through the whole process here.
I think it definitely has for sure. And I think it's made me realize a lot about myself as a photographer that I need to focus on making work that I want to make rather than trying to fit into a category. And I say it with the greatest respects is I don't want to go down the route of using medium format and using Kodak Portra and taking those type of portraits, as beautiful as they are, that's not really who I am now. And I don't want to get caught in that style, I suppose. So I have been working on other projects in the background. One's a black and white project, which I've never done, so that's cool. And I've still got my project from university, which is called a haptic, that I've never really carried on with, which is on my radar, I think. Yeah.
No, I think it's always good to have something else going on in the background, and it's always interesting once someone's gone through the process of bringing out a book or a zine, however they do it, published, self-published, anything. Just because I think if you've never done it before, it makes you look at your work maybe in slightly different ways than you don't normally do so if you're putting it on the website or sharing it online. And I think it's a really positive way for everyone to be looking at their work in different ways and piecing things together, and it's I suppose it's part of the fun, part of the challenge for doing and creating some physical output, because as you say, the physical product, the physical attributes of a book are just are so key and so important to the book as well, in terms of just the scale, how it sits, how it works, how the images are laid out, nice paper choices, the nice feel to it. And I agree with your point. Not everything needs, or when you mentioned, not everything needs to be big, fancy hardback books, far from it, because actually, when you
Yeah.
go up to that level, you do begin to limit your market, because you begin to naturally, just from a price point of view, price a whole segment out. And with the price of books these days going up and up and up, I think it's always something that people need
Yeah.
to be conscious about.
Yeah, and all credit to Greg. If I remember off the top of my head, I think he did offer me the option of doing a hardback, and naturally you would jump to doing a hardback as a photographer. You know, you think embossed cover. That book as a hardback would be phenomenal, and I think it would be even better as a hardback. But from the book perspective, why are you, if you're making a book and someone's publishing it, that book has to sell. I was an unheard of photographer publishing his first book, where Greg, as the publisher at Cozy, was very, very amazingly putting up the money to publish it for me, printing it, binding it. Greg did everything. Like when I say that, I cannot stress how awesome he is to do that for you. I didn't have anything to do other than sending the PDF and proofing it and the images. Greg did everything. And then we obviously both shared it on our social medias. And Greg made a very good point. He said, you can do a hardback, but can you sell a minimum amount of copies? And I can't guarantee that. And there's that risk element in the cost. So I said, no, let's keep it. You know, if it does well as a softback, we'll look at it again in the future. So I just wanted to make a really nice softback book, with really nice images, but just, you know, less is more, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you mentioned the point of, yeah, look, if it sells well, and I'm sure it will, and hopefully it does, then there's always options to look at other different variations, different publications in the future. You look at the likes of Mark Wilson. He's on, I think, edition 4 of The Last
Yeah.
Stand, and there's been various tweaks, and I think it started out as hardback, and the latest one is a much bigger soft back, so he's kind of gone role reverse. But it demonstrates that I think books, documentary books, particularly where there's maybe a historical connection, will always have appeal for people of different generations as years progress, as the younger generation maybe become slightly older, and then therefore actually they have more of an interest in what happened in the past and so on and so forth. So I always think, yeah, you've got to do the right thing, and you make a valid point. Yeah, you're publishing your first book, largely unknown. And as you say, you're put in the spot, can you sell this many copies? And it's all fine and well having however many followers people have on Instagram, social media, etc. Getting someone to put their hand in their pocket, it's very different. You'd maybe always rely on your mum, but beyond that, it can be pretty tricky. But the thing is, there's now so many good options for producing really good quality softback books that do the job. They present it in a beautiful format and it's accessible, and it allows people to collect books and bodies of work that otherwise they might not necessarily do, or take a punt on the unknown photographer, and you get some cracking books. And there's plenty of books and zines that I've got that if it hadn't been for taking a more affordable route, just wouldn't exist. And that for me is a real shame, but that's why it's great that people look at other options.
Yeah, and I think another place as a publisher do that really well is they just create really simple but nicely designed books. And Greg Itkozu does the same. He does do the occasional documentary book like mine, which he's a really, really appreciative for him doing that. But you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Mark Wilson's is a really good example of where you cross the line between that informational history book and a photography project. And what I really liked about him, and I've spoken to him a few times, is he's like hit a market in photography where it attracts people outside of photography.
Absolutely.
And his projects obviously are so detailed and so in depth that it just works. And his books did inspire quite a lot in mine, in the sense of I really believe in having an essay in the book.
Yep.
Which is why I got Morgan, the art historian, to write the essay. Is I think sometimes you need that context for the outside person who doesn't necessarily know photography to really understand what they're looking at and why the sequence is as it is.
Yep.
Which is something I really wanted in the book as well.
Yeah, no, I think for the subject matter you're talking about, I think it really adds a lot to the book. I think it's a very, very well written piece of prose as well, far better than most photographers could probably write, to be perfectly honest. And I think that's always a challenge.
Yeah.
But no, I think it really adds a nice depth, a bit of context to the work that you're doing as well. But yeah, as you say, Mark, yeah, there's a real success if you can appeal your work to a group outside of the photography circles. A lot of some of the climbers, Nicholas White does it quite well with his Bothies book, Black Dot, as well, because that appeals to anyone who enjoys the hills. You don't need to be taking photographs. And obviously the likes of Alex Nail and Colin Pratt, who are up the mountains, lots of people who enjoy walking. And therefore, you broaden your appeal every single time. And I think with the work that you've done as well, you're broadening your appeal to anyone who's maybe not interested in the history. And I suppose, as you say, that the change in the empire from lockdown and kind of the follow the aftermath of everything else that's gone on before and since as well.
Yeah, and I think with my book is I've always had quite a perception of history. I say, what's the word I'm thinking of? The coincidences between events and how there's patterns where they repeat themselves. And I think now it's very much happened again. I think if you looked out over the country today and Europe and the rest of the world, it is eerily similar to pre-World War One, really. It almost feels like we're sleepwalking into a crisis. And I think the book was me kind of realizing that in a visual form of wanting to explain that to people through imagery. And And I think now, as things have progressed, the book has more relevance as people can see things coming now, because it's that beauty of hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah, I absolutely. It's like capture a moment in time that everyone can look back on, which is wonderful. And hindsight's a wonderful thing. And yeah, it's really really nice body of work. I've really enjoyed looking through it. But obviously, you talk about your passion and interest in books. So I'm always very keen for my guests to share maybe four or five of their favorite photo books, and I appreciate it changes all the time from your own bookshelf. So I'll over to you, Sam, for maybe a couple of your favorites.
So this was tough because
It's
I
meant to
only
be.
buy books I really like, and I know photographers will say that, but I genuinely, if I read it, if I open a book and I'm like,
Yep.
if I'm not sure I want it, I won't. So it was a challenge for me. So I've done it a bit differently to most photographers. And I've put the books that have inspired me most over my journey to where I am now, rather than my favorite
Good.
books
No,
here and now.
that's good, because a number of people do share maybe the first ever book that they've bought that got them into photography, or and you also get quirky ones that maybe don't actually coincide with what someone shoots at the moment, but it's something they've just got a natural interest in. So yeah, I'm very interested to see your selection.
So my first book is from a photographer who, in the mainstream photography world, not many people have probably ever heard of or known about. And that's by an American photographer who lives in Australia called Christian Watson. And it's his book called Defeat. Backstory on Christian is he's a kind of traditional old school graphic designer and photographer. So his style is traditional type work from the
Yep.
1900s, that sort of journeyman lifestyle. He lived in Oregon, so you can kind of already picture the style of photography
Yep.
images that he does. But I'll show you the book because we're on video, but it's a nice hardback
Oh,
called
nice.
Defeat, and it is really good. It's a book kind of reflecting on the changes of life, the idea again, and you can see it in my book in the way it reads, is it's about moving on with progression and losing the skills of sort of our ancestors. It also talks a lot about fatherhood and the progression of yourself, as a photographer and as an individual. And it's by someone, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but Ajaz Ahmed and Christian Watson. So Ajaz does a lot of the writing in the book.
Lovely.
But it's basically a series of really lovely landscape images, from Oregon and different places sort of across the US, where it's this idea of journeying to try and not in a cliche way understand who you are, but it's that
Yep.
relationship with the outdoors, and how spending time when you have time alone with your thoughts while making work kind of allows you to think more about who you are. But it's probably my favorite physical book in terms of design, paper stock, print, gold
Yeah,
embossed
looks
on
nice.
the side, on the spine. And I managed to get this from a National Trust bookshop for £20 when it's £70 new. So it's not
Very
only my
good.
favorite and most inspiring book, it's my most Best Buy book.
Yeah, good bargain there.
My second book is probably my favorite, most inspired me during uni. And this photographer did a talk to us in university as well, which is The Prospect of Immortality by Murray Ballard. To keep it short, my graduate project at uni was meeting and photographing people who believed in UFOs.
Right.
And a project I did following that was meeting and photographing people who believe in ghosts at a very specific castle here in Devon.
Okay.
Murray Ballard's book, Prospect of Immortality, is about how people in America cryogenically freeze themselves. And the book starts off, I think, if I'm off right off the top of my head, similar idea. He met people who believed in freezing yourself to be brought back to life in the future. And
Right.
it led him from the UK to America. and it led him to also Russia. And what I love about the book and the images is there's just an insane concept between cryogenics in Britain to America, and then what is almost like an abandoned Soviet warehouse, which looks like a sort of Frankenstein experiment going on. So it's a really beautiful
Very
project,
cool.
and the book itself is absolutely phenomenally
Looks
designed.
really nice.
Again, hardback, embossed. Yeah, just
Yeah,
brilliant.
it looks very, very nice embossing on the front cover in particular. Really nicely done.
Yeah, really, really good. The next book is what was my first photo book that I bought from a documentary project. So the first encounter I had with documentary photography was on a YouTube channel called Vice before they got bought out by Mr. Murdoch, like most of these companies. And they did a series called Picture Perfect, where they followed photographers on major projects. And one really stood out to me, which is a photographer called Donald Weaver. He's an American photographer. And I think it's in the sort of 2010s, might be just before. He did a project called Bastard Eden, Our Chernobyl, which is a softback book, very similar in a way to my book in terms of the materials and the paper stock. But Donald went to the Chernobyl zone several
All right.
times and photographed the people who lived there and resided there. And it's just a really lovely book, and it's almost a bit of a document now, given the fact that obviously Russia invaded Ukraine and went
Yeah.
back into the Chernobyl zone. So
Yeah.
it's really cool.
Cool. Nice.
My final book is one of my favorites, and that's The Island by Robert Darch. I know Rob personally, and he was a tutor to me as well for a while.
Right.
And this is his second book. And I won't go into it too much, but it's a really beautiful book reflecting on sort of Britain post Brexit, and again similar to me, where the future of the country is, with a particular focus on young people. But this is a self-published book by Rob, and it's probably one of my favorites in my collection because a lot of considered design in it with the paper stock, and everything about it is just beautiful. It's the only book I keep sealed still,
Yeah, it's a
which is
beautiful
really
book.
cool.
Re really, really nice. Really nice guy, Rob, as well. I've been fortunate enough to speak to him, and yeah, I always I think
Yeah.
was it the second book, third book, maybe something like that. But yeah, I look forward to seeing what he's up to next because yeah, just very considered and very well thought out, and just a really nice whole really nice body of work that he's put together there.
Yeah, and I think all the books who are my favorites as well, all the photographers I either see a little bit of myself in, they're just re really genuinely nice people.
Yep.
And I think if you meet them or know them a bit as well, it really does make all the difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when buying their work, because you know more about it, you know.
Yeah. But I think particularly when you're looking at something documentary, because I think, yeah, you can really get a bit more context and a bit of understanding in terms of how the mind is thinking and what the mind is thinking and what were they really trying to tell you. But no, yeah, I love lovely selection of books. I always have a wee look and a wee search. I get a couple of weeks head start before anyone else knows what books you've suggested, so that's always quite good. And it's always nice for me. I don't shoot documentary. I never, to be honest, never say never, but I'm very, very unlikely to. But I love documentary books. I still find them really, really interesting. And I've got
Yeah.
several, and they when the subject matter, whatever, really appeals to me, then yeah, I think they're. It's wonderful, and it's always really good just to see different bodies, and also historical photography as well from different eras is really quite nice. So, I look forward, hopefully, to never seeing COVID again and looking back on 20 years to see your book to remind myself of
Yeah.
what actually went down at that time. But on that note, Sam, it just leaves me to say thank you very much for your time this evening. It's really been a genuine pleasure chatting to you and kind of hearing the background. And the story to Winds of Change, which is yeah, really, really nice body of work and beautifully printed from Kozu. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and publicly it's the first time I've spoken about the book on any podcast, so publicly a big thank you to Kozu Books and Greg as well for doing it, because he made this happen. So thank you.
My pleasure. Cheers, Sam.